15 years ago, six teams and their front office executives sat on pins and needles across the country, wondering just where the NBA's top free agent on the 2010 marketplace and the game's premier talent would go. As a 25-year-old star forward, six-time All-Star, and reigning back-to-back MVP at the time by the name of LeBron James, was getting prepared to take center stage beside the longtime sportscaster Jim Gray in front of the young children at the Boys and Girls Club of Greenwich, Connecticut, on behalf of charity. In addition to also revealing the official destination that he was getting set to take his talents to a few months later to begin the 2010-11 campaign. Welcome to Second Chance Points, an extension of the New 24. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined as always beside my co-host and Torrence Stagger to discuss a major event and television special that you probably can remember exactly where you were when you saw it if you are a diehard basketball fan, and that's The Decision. Let's jump right into it. According to Nielsen, an average of 9.948 million people watched the event live in the U.S., with nearly 13.1 million people watching the moment James made his announcement. Now, we know this event helped to raise $2.5 million for the Boys and Girls Club of Greenwich, Connecticut. We also know that it generated another $3.5 million from advertisement revenue that was donated among other charities as well. Hell, even a 13-year-old kid by the name of Donovan Mitchell happened to be on hand for the event. However, this was an event that was planned out as far back as a month prior during the NBA Finals, when LeBron's business partner and good friend and Mav Carter received a pitch from Jim Gray and longtime media agent and mogul Ari Emanuel to bring this idea into reality. Carter then convinced LeBron to do the show, while Emanuel went on to pitch the idea to then ESPN president John Skipper, which, as we know, was successful. LeBron's management team took care of the rest. When you look back on it all, though, why do you believe LeBron decided to go through with it?
It was time. 7 years in Cleveland, two MVPs, back-to-back 60-plus win seasons. A lot of trades had been made. Not too many free agent signings during his time period there. You brought in a Larry Hughes, but you also lost Carlos Boozer early in his career. Throughout all these different changes, multiple coaches, a new ownership group coming in midway through his tenure there. Only one finals appearance in 07. And that was before the expectations came. But when the expectations were there the following three seasons, one conference finals appearance, two second round exits, 2010 was shaping up to be the biggest offseason ever. Dwayne Wade was a free agent. Chris Bosh, Carlos Boozer once again. Amari Stoudemire. Guys who aren't always mentioned because they went ahead and took deals early. Joe Johnson. Carmelo Anthony was supposed to be a part of this class, but he did what Kevin Durant would do later that summer and sign a 5-year extension instead of the 3 years that Dwayne Wade and the guys I previously just mentioned signed to put themselves in position for this summer. And a lot of teams were spending money. It was well known. Teams in LA, teams in New York, even the Chicago Bulls, who we never hear about spending money, they were in position and ready to grab one of these free agents. But unfortunately for LeBron James, he was a part of an organization that had a chance to trade for an Amari Stoudemire during the season, and they wouldn't do it because they didn't want to move J.J. Hickson, apparently. Which means that the real reason for that must have been, we are not going to pay two guys max money over here, because that means we would have to pay you and Amari. And because Bron is one of the greatest passers of all time, he made J.J. Hickson look like an effective finisher off the pick and roll during those last couple of seasons in Cleveland. So what is a man to do with all the talent in the world? You show that you can win games with a variety of rosters, undersized in some ways. When you look at the backcourt, Mo Williams, Delonte West, slow-footed, Joe Jonas Elgaskis, and Anderson Varejao. When you're dealing with teams like the Orlando Magic, the Boston Celtics, the Chicago Bulls, teams who have multiple scores, a lot of size, defense, and willing to spend money in the offseason, LeBron at least had to give himself a chance to find his best option, even if it didn't mean leaving Cleveland. But he had to explore those options because he went through pretty much everything in just 7 years there.
I think LeBron decided to go through with the decision as the live television event. From the soul standpoint of, here was a guy who was 7 years in the league, like Torrence alluded to, had accomplished a ton with the Cleveland Cavaliers, have been widely documented and in the spotlight a ton. For the first time in his career, he was able to control the announcement from beginning to end. And I think when you put all of that into full context and you add on top of that, he didn't go to college. This was kind of like his national signing day, if you will. And his chance to have his moment in the spotlight. Not that he didn't have those moments before, but I think that's one of the main reasons why he went through it. He looked at it as a way in which he held the power in the car. When you think about his experience in Cleveland, like Torrance was alluding to, about how the Cavaliers did have a chance to get Amari Stoudemire, but they opted instead to get Anton Jameson. It put Cleveland in a predicament from a salary cap standpoint where they didn't really have enough money to bring in the talent. And like Torrance said, they weren't willing to go over the luxury tax to build a true winner around LeBron James. So I always believe that from the moment he left the floor of the TD Garden, that there was always a possibility of another team being able to snatch him up, especially like Torrance alluded to, there were so many teams that had money to spend and had prepared themselves for this situation in this blockbuster summer that was 2010.
See, one thing that's, I would say, just not really put into context enough, he never had a chance to trust his organization. The Michael Jordan story can't be told without Jerry Krause. The Kobe Bryant story cannot be told without Jerry West. LeBron's story in Miami wouldn't be told without Pat Riley. But that's also the reason for another decision that was made later on down the line. When you speak about LeBron wanting to have control from beginning to end of this whole situation, the decision, the free agency, don't you feel like that a lot of that has to do with that? Just the fact, like, people always, you look at it in today's context, like, man, LeBron has so much control, so much power. This is the genesis of it. And I'm saying, to me at least, and how you feel, the Cleveland Cavaliers are responsible for it more than anything. Because you just never did right by him. Yeah, you know, you hear they gave him superstar amenities. Bron can be late. Bron can spend an extra day in another city. Bron can have his people on a plane with him. You know, all of those things. But what did you really do for a superstar? I always felt like they knew Bron was so great that let's just put fringe pieces around him. Like, nah, he just need a shooter. Let's just go get a guy. Oh, he just need another playmaker. Let's just go get a guy. But what would have always made them more overwhelming is to just go get another equal, almost. Two guys I think about from that era, Andre Iguodala and Richard Jefferson. To me, those were the LeBron teammate. If you know, if you guys had it your way, if on one side where he shouldn't have teamed up with the likes of a Dwayne Wade or a Chris Bosh, he should have did it homegrown. Well, the Cavs had the chance to get Andre Iguodala. Now, not technically, they had the number 10 pick. He was selected number 9. But even on paper at the time, Andre Iguodala, you got to at least try it out with LeBron. If you can put Andre Iguodala on the perimeter with LeBron James, both of those guys at their athletic primes during that time period, who's to say Andre Iguodala couldn't be Scottie Pippen? Because, shit, he became a version of it anyway once he landed next to another superstar. Richard Jefferson, this was a guy that averaged 20 points per game. And in 2016, his athleticism was the difference in the 3-1 comeback. Being able to go to a Richard Jefferson when Kevin Love couldn't keep up with the pace set on the court. So what about the organization being responsible? Just not being able to instill trust into a talent this big. Because I look back at this time and feel like he had every intention on staying in Cleveland.
You bring up the 2004 NBA draft when Andre Iguodala was selected number 9 by the Philadelphia 76ers. The Cavs did have a number 10 pick in that draft, and they took Luke Jackson out of Oregon. We all know how that turned out. But you know another guy that they passed up on who fell a slot later was J.R. Smith at 18th overall, who was selected by the New Orleans Hornets at the time. Now, you bring up how Richard Jefferson played a key role in that 3-1 comeback. So did J.R. Smith. That was another wing that they could have sought to pair with LeBron in his first stint. But as we know, he came along later in the LeBron journey. I think the Cleveland Cavaliers as a franchise, they weren't really prepared on how to deal with a LeBron James because they never had a player like that in the history of their franchise. And we know about the stories coming up as kids. It's well documented that when he was going to games sitting courtside as a senior at St. Vincent St. Mary, he had meet with Cavaliers personnel about how, like, hey, y'all don't even have a trophy case in y'all practice facility. What's up with that? Talked about how at one point in time, he didn't think that they was necessarily ready for him. I truly believe if LeBron had control of where he could have ended up 7 years prior to this very day that we're talking about in the decision, all we know, he might not have ended up in Cleveland. However, he did end up there. He tried to make the most out of the situation. But like you said too, Torrence, they were trying to win on the cheap with him. And they nearly did it, in large part due to his greatness and the way that he was able to take that team to new heights. One thing people got to keep in mind, we talk about the finals appearance. He did that in his fourth season at the age of 22 in just his second run in the playoffs.
That's an underrated point to all of this. Akron is not Cleveland. LeBron grew up in Akron. You know how people in Chicago treat people from Springfield?
Yeah.
So everybody that's in Springfield, not just a Bulls fan. Everybody in Gary, Indiana, not a Pacers fan. Geography matters, not even if it's like within the same state. As far as I've heard, LeBron grew up a Bulls fan to begin with. He didn't even grow up a Cavs fan. He didn't grow up a Cleveland Browns fan. The business of the NBA is why he landed in Cleveland to begin with. And I think that's just a large part of this story, because the world expected him to have an attachment to a place that was never like truly home completely.
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's well said. And I do agree with that, because I never seen a franchise in my life rebrand the way that that franchise did from the moment he arrived there. Like, you could tell was a very LeBron-centric or centered project in some respects.
Yeah, they used the royal colors, the wine and gold, the changing of the logo. Now, it was no doubt that from a business and marketing standpoint, they understood what they had. I just don't think they appreciated what they had from a basketball standpoint. The moves were obvious looking back on it. They were obvious at the time, but come on, bro. Like, a guy gets you to the finals in 07 without another all-star. You go get him another all-star. Mo Williams made the all-star team playing with Bron, and that was still kind of controversial. Nobody ever speaks about that part. The whole Michael Jordan, when Pippen became an all-star, then he started winning championships. Bron got to the finals without one. So imagine if the Cavs, that following offseason, they're aggressive the same way the Boston Celtics were that offseason. See, that's the other part about Bron's career, where he has these moments of success and they completely get derailed in the offseason by another contender immediately. You get to the finals at 22, and then the big three Celtics are formed a month later. Kobe got a team with 3 7-footers, and one of them is Pau Gasol. And we got Lamar Odom, who, let's just skip production, just as a talent, is one of the most talented players the league ever seen. You talk about putting guys in different eras and how their games would adapt. I mean, imagine Lamar Odom today. Lamar Odom was a form of LeBron in some way. So this was his competition around the league, and he has a team that's not aggressive, not in a great location, and they not trying to pay guys. What would you do in this position? That's what I would ask those out there. What would you do?
Speaking of which, let's get into the six teams that were involved in the running for the services of LeBron James during the infamous summer that was in 2010. We know that he took meetings with the Heat, Nets, Knicks, and Clippers, in addition to the Bulls and Cavaliers, who secured the last two meetings with the King leading up to the decision. Every team met with him on his home turf in downtown Cleveland. Although there was constant speculation in the days and hours prior to the decision as to whether or not LeBron would leave the Cavaliers, because a lot of people at the time viewed the Bulls as the potential favorite to lure King James out of the land. Some analysts didn't view the Heat as the odds-on favorite to acquire the man who just took Cleveland to the NBA Finals for the first time ever 3 years prior, as you heard me and Torrence talk about. Now, Torrence, do you happen to remember any of the hoopla surrounding these meetings, or your own personal thoughts as to where you believe he might end up in the days leading to the decision?
Well, let's skip prior to the meetings. The one team that was always a part of the LeBron James narrative during the first 7 years in the league was the New York Knicks. I'm a big fan of LeBron's shoe line, and I want to say maybe from the LeBron 4 on, there was always a New York City pair.
Yep.
So even Nike was pushing that narrative of maybe LeBron will come here. Maybe this will happen. Maybe the biggest star in the league will be in the biggest market in the league. Maybe we'll finally see that happen. That was a part of the big tease. The Bulls thing was always weird to me for some reason. It just felt like a not quite a rivalry, because we never beat dude during his time here, but him and Noah was already having a little spat. Derrick Rose, you know, he got the quiet assassin mentality. I think I remember even hearing a story back then that what Rose didn't really recruit Bron.
No, he didn't.
People wanted him to like really like, reach out, and he was like, nah, basically like that ain't his job.
Right. I'm good. I'm fine with who I got.
Yeah. And hey, you know, he was proved right in some ways because he might not got what he got if dude pulled up to the shot. The Clippers, that was interesting too. The Clippers was interesting only from the standpoint that before the Donald Sterling thing even happened, most of the articles I was reading at the time, anytime they brought up the Clippers prior to the decision time period with the meetings, it was always about, hey, Maverick Carter, he was with David Geffen, and they were speaking about putting together a group to buy the Clippers. And, you know, so it was always kind of this thing where, all right, well, now maybe Bron want to be in L.A. too, but he definitely don't want to play under Sterling. He needs to get the okay for somebody to buy the team, and maybe he'll do that. And you fast forward 4 years later, Steve Ballmer gets the team in 2014, richest owner in the league, and that would have been something I would have always wanted to see. Guy like Bron with unlimited pockets with, because we just spoke about the Cavs not being willing to spend the money. The Nets, we know what that was about. It was the Jay-Z connection. That was a part of their narrative. This is what Jay-Z here for. This is what he a part of the ownership group. And we know in real life, that was really more of a local New York City move where Jay-Z helped the Brooklyn portion of the move get pushed through politically. You know, it created a good narrative. And I'll be honest, bro, even back then, to me, the Miami Heat, I'm not going to say it was far-fetched, but going into it, I didn't think much of it. I had the Bulls and the Knicks. That's pretty much the top two teams outside the Cavs.
It's funny we had this conversation because it takes me back to the exact time where, you know, and shout out to my Uncle Larry James, who I know created a lot of suits for NBA players, was in the know with a lot of guys, still is in the know with a lot of guys around the league. He hit my line right after I had left the Taste of Chicago. And that was during a time where Dwayne Wade was taking meetings at the Ritz-Carlton, for those who know. And he was calling me saying, hey, nephew, LeBron coming to Chicago. And I couldn't see it at the time, even though I know that they had enough space for at least two stars. I know that Luol Deng was still on the roster. And even though it was reports about them potentially doing a deal with the Raptors that would have sent Deng to Toronto in exchange for Chris Bosh, it just seemed like a lot, because when you had the Heat with $46 million to play with in cap space, opening up three spots the way that they did, combined with the factors that Torrence brought into the equation with the points he made, where you got a Derrick Rose who is coming off his second season in the league at that time, having MVP aspirations alongside of Joakim Noah, who didn't always see eye to eye with Bron. The same LeBron that used to be dancing on the sidelines and shit alongside of Danny Green taking photos and all of that. A lot of things would have had to get mended for LeBron to come here. Mind you, LeBron coming to the city of Chicago where Michael reigns supreme, right? And got six banners atop of the United Center. You can't wear his number. You're going to have to switch to number six and try to win the seventh in his building. Like, it just was a lot. Now, the Knicks factor, I could definitely see that one. Yeah, they had enough space to sign two max free agents. We know that Amari Stoudemire was definitely going there. That was being rumbled about even during his latter days in Phoenix. They was even trying to entice Joe Johnson. I definitely could have saw that. And I think from a marketing standpoint, it would have worked out incredibly well, considering the fact that even though we know LeBron put on his politician hat in later years and was like, hey, I'm a Cleveland Indians fan at the time, we know that the original baseball team that he liked was the New York Yankees. And like Torrence said, with the LeBron collection from like the four, at least down to, I'd say, the seven, you had some Yankee packs in there. Because for those who are shoe connoisseurs, you remember when he got that 52-point triple-double, exactly what he was wearing in MSG.
Yeah, I remember that Yankees pair. I believe that was the LeBron 5. And then I know that following year, he had that LeBron 6, that Big Apple pair, the all-red pair. That pair was crazy. That pair was crazy. See, the number 23 thing, that was a story in itself as well, because he made it known during the season that he was changing his number from number 23 to 6 because he wanted to honor Mike. Now, that's funny in hindsight looking at it, because it's like, okay, well, he's going to change his number. And if you wanted to just go to the conspiracy side of it, like, oh, he always knew he was going to Miami. I mean, that's a funny way to put the reasoning out there that, hey, I'm doing it to honor Mike. Okay, well, maybe he going to the Bulls because he know he can't wear it there. Well, no, you know, the Miami Heat, of course, they got Michael Jordan number retired too. And that was just always a strange fact to me. And two more things. The Knicks and the Bulls, they were the first two teams to sign guys during free agency. Amari, first day to the Knicks. Boozer, to the Bulls. And you know what? Looking back on it, I hated it. I hated it for fans of both franchises because now it's like, bro, how you know that that's LeBron or D-Wade first choice of teammate they want to play with if both teams got room for two slots?
Right.
And thinking about what all the Bulls had too, I mean, the Bulls could have put together a big three. You got two slots and you got a load of talent on the team that you could have put together and got a trade done possibly. Because the Bulls probably had the best roster out of these teams that Bron met with. And the Heat, of course, they had Dwayne Wade as far as a superstar already on the roster. And the Knicks, of course, hey, blank checkbook, New York City, which was interesting because, hey, Bron might have only had to win one championship to be solidified in New York.
Oh, yeah, if he'd have won a championship there with the drought that they had at the time and still currently have.
They would have talked, they would have talked about that man like he was him, like the second coming.
He'd have been a god in the Gotham City for damn sure. But when you talk about, you know, the roster situation, at the time as I was looking at it, I did think on paper the Bulls had the best roster equipped to bring LeBron in and compete right away for a title. And I think that's why my uncle at the time was saying it. Another reason why I think that Chicago connection was so prevalent throughout the 2010 free agency period with LeBron is because we know that LeBron really started to play in a lot of major runs in this city dating back to his time as a teenager at the old Hoops gym that Tim Grover ran, Michael Jordan's former trainer. And we also know that Nike used to host a lot of camps here. And this is the stomping ground where LeBron James met a man by the name of William Wesley, who we know as Worldwide West, who became one of the game's ultimate power players behind the scenes. And nowadays, you see him, ironically enough, beside Leon Rose in the front office with the New York Knicks.
And you know, the other connection to Worldwide West and LeBron during that summer was Tom Thibodeau.
Yep.
That added even further to the speculation that LeBron was coming to the Bulls because the whole pitch at the time was CAA, they got Bron, they got Thibodeau, they connected through Worldwide West, they're a package deal. And, the appeal for Bron was supposed to be, well, we giving you the guy that was the architect of those Boston Celtics defenses that slowed you down, you know? Right. So that was a part of the narrative for the Bulls at the time, too.
And who was LeBron James' agent at the time of this incident we talk about? Leon Rose.
Yep, Leon Rose. Yeah. But this is also the first big project of LeBron, Rich, Randy, and Mav kind of starting to strike out on their own also. So I don't know all the agency business and things like that, but I would definitely believe that this summer might have had something to do with the eventual split down the line. Even if it's just aspirational, like, man, you know, we really made that happen. So why we can't keep doing it going forward? You know, it could be something as simple as that, but it definitely, man, it's a crazy rabbit hole when you just look at it. Cause like Tom Thibodeau on the Knicks now, like, and Leon Rose and Worldwide West running the Knicks and then you remember Bron and Wade last game in L.A. Bron hugged D-Wade and they called him on the mic saying it was going to always be either here or the Garden. So even with like the Knicks, it's like LeBron been kind of, he's funny, man. He still to this day kind of plays with the decision in certain interviews, you know, alluding to certain like, hey, man, you know, I was real close to coming to this team or that team. And
now we know that in the days and hours leading up to the decision, that the Miami Heat were beginning to emerge as the favorites among all the analysts after entering free agency with nearly $46 million of cap space to spare and retain not only their all-star guard Dwayne Wade, but to pair him beside two other stars down in the 305. The day before the main event involving LeBron was set to air on ESPN, Wade and all-star forward Chris Bosh announced that they were going to sign with Miami on the network in a live edition of SportsCenter alongside Michael Wilbon, where the two expressed joy and spoke openly about the possibility of playing beside their draft classmate when asked about it. A day later, they received their wish as LeBron James announced he would be taking his talents to South Beach. Lots of people love to play the what-if games nowadays on various topics of past, as well as the recent present. But what if he happened to choose any location outside of Miami? Which franchise among the five other teams did you find to be the most appealing when thinking about the myriad of possibilities when it came to what LeBron could accomplish there?
The Clippers, just a historical mess at that time. The Knicks, historical mess. Brooklyn Nets, nobody takes them serious. The Miami Heat just suffered. For some reason, even when Dwayne Wade and Bosch were doing that interview, it still didn't, like, even cross my mind as a possibility leading into the decision.
Really?
Even them talking about it, I was like, oh, y'all done. Like, that's it. Y'all two playing together. Y'all gonna win 50-some games, and y'all gonna be getting put out in the second round by either Bron or Boston. But, like, y'all too, like, that's great, but bro, in 2009, one of the great MVP races, like, LeBron and D-Wade, to me, had, like, near equal roster. LeBron won 60-plus games with his and got to the conference finals. And Dwayne Wade was put out in the first round. I just didn't really, like, I don't know. It just didn't register in my head as a real possibility. Like, up until the decision, I really thought it was going to be Cleveland or New York.
I think when I saw the live edition of SportsCenter, I definitely thought it was Miami at that point, because I remember Chris Bosh was smiling, grinning, like, hey, 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 good luck, LeBron, and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, the cat out the bag now, in my opinion, because it was like, it's just too obvious. And I agree. I did think with Wade and Bosh together and no LeBron, yeah, 50-plus win team, second round exit, because I remember telling some of my friends at the time after that interview aired with Mike Wilbon, I was like, you know what? That don't really concern me. It's someone that was really, like, looking at it from another team's perspective, and the Boston Celtics that I followed a lot with Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce under Doc Rivers leading the charge. But I wasn't concerned about them. But after that moment, I was like, you know what? That's it. But the one team that I thought would have been the most appealing outside of the Bulls is New York, from the standpoint that he was going to be in a similar situation to what he was in Cleveland, just in a bigger market with a franchise that was going to be willing to spend money and put some talent around him. And I really wondered what it would have looked like there with him and Amari, and potentially if they could have made a move to try and get Melo, because at that point, they would have become the new super team with a title ceiling. Even though James, Wade, and Bosh, they did take pay cut to team up in Miami, if you either put that pairing in New York or him with Amari, like, they could have really made some things shake. The Clippers, to me, was just always a crazy thing to me. Like, it always boggles me to this day that he took a meeting with them. Because for those who don't know or of a younger age, like, this not the Clippers that you see now under Steve Ballmer. This was a franchise in total shambles at the time. And Donald Sterling, who we sure would find out a hell of a lot more information about in the years to follow this event, was in a lot of situations at the time. And we know that he really didn't give a fuck about his basketball team, if we just gonna keep it real.
Nah, Donald Sterling, a wild boy. I'm sure Brian heard about them white parties and was like, nah, that's too much extra work. The Bulls was obvious. You think about everything from a traditional standpoint. It's like, all right, you want to leave? Cool. You know what I'm saying? You beat them guys, so it's cool. Which is a funny narrative. Fast forward into the Kevin Durant thing, because it's like, you lost to them guys, you shouldn't want to go there. As you alluded to earlier, why would the guys that keep losing to you want you on their team too? You know, like, when you speak about Noah and Dang and guys like that, I mean, that starting five would have been incredible.
Question for you real quick. You ever think about how different Derrick Rose's career would have been if he had a chance to team up with LeBron James? Of course, I don't think the 2010-11 MVP comes about. But do you ever just think about that pairing and what it could have looked like? And we know that he had a relationship with Carlos Boozer dating back to their early years playing together in Cleveland.
Yeah, he probably was mad at Booz. Like, bro, you left the first time. Like, I'm cool on you. You know, people don't think about it like that. I don't know. It's hard to say, because Derrick Rose, it's hard to almost sometimes separate the injury part of it, because I just think Derrick Rose is one of those talents that would have been good and great next to anybody. He could have been what Kyrie was able to do in 2016. Derrick Rose, he might have not have won the MVP in 2011, but he might have got the chance to take that shot in the 2011 finals, possibly.
For sure.
That's crazy, because, man, you think about it from that standpoint, that was the best playoff series of that decade, possibly, was Boston against Chicago. And now you throw LeBron into that rivalry with the rivalry he already got with the Celtics. Yeah. I mean, bro, that
would have been up.
It would have been up, man. It would have been up. It would have been up. And that's the thing. How do you feel like the narrative in the city would have been about Bron? Because see, outside of Derrick Rose, we ain't had no real superstars here besides Mike. So now we would have had a real superstar in the building. And we know today we got these Jordan loyalists. But I know a Chicago guy in his heart of heart, he going to ride with the Bulls. That's what he care about. So now you going to let yourself be conflicted by a stupid argument? Or you going to appreciate the fact that he here now?
I think a lot of people would have had to mince some words if he had made a decision to join the Chicago Bulls in the summer of 2010 in this city. But damn sure. And yeah, it would have been a lot of people, for as many Jordan loyalists as they are, they would have had to, you know, come over to that side. Because I truly believe, even though we never know what would have came from it, I do believe they would have got to the NBA Finals with Derrick Rose and LeBron James. I damn sure believe that. And it's funny because that's what my uncle was pitching to me when he was saying, hey, in my heart of hearts, I just believe he's coming here. And I think that the NBA Finals in 2011 will be the Los Angeles Lakers versus Chicago Bulls. He told me that. And I said, I could see it if he come here, but that's the question, will he? But I do believe had he came, yeah, a lot of people wouldn't be singing the same tunes about LeBron that they currently do now or even were back then.
And an underrated team, I'm not sure if they had a meeting, but they name definitely got threw around at the time, was the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Dallas Mavericks, they got their name threw around because I believe that 2010 All-Star game was in Dallas. Wasn't that? That was the one at the Cowboys
Stadium.
Yeah,
Cowboys Stadium in Arlington.
Yeah, now that, you know what's crazy? That was one of the times where I did hear people allude to Bosh, Wade, and Bron in particular playing together because somebody was saying that could be a part of the pitch to Bron, Wade, and Bosh. Like, hey, man, we could play like 8 regular season games in Cowboys Stadium. We could play playoff games here. Like, you know, and of course, we know what the Dallas Mavericks meant to LeBron legacy after the decision as well, too. So, yeah, that's a wild sliding doors as well.
And it's funny you bring up Dallas because we know Chris Bosh is from the DFW area.
Yeah, he is. But see, Dirk had a weird reputation, too, at that time, too. So even if it was just to bring Bron in particular, it's like, yeah, Dirk had a weird reputation. Like, it was NBA players as quoted as calling him soft at times.
No, I remember. And, you know, at that time and stage, in that era of the NBA, European and international players weren't looked at the way that they are in the eyes of the masses now. But you know, there's certain times and events that happen in the world where you can just remember exactly where you were the moment you either heard about it, or happened to see it in live time as it took place on your television and so forth. For many people, the decision was one of those times, no matter what age you were at that time in your life, you just know where you were. Do you happen to remember where you were when you either heard the news or watched the event live on July 8, 2010? And if so, what were your initial thoughts in the midst of all that?
Yeah, I just remember we was at my pop's crib. I'm sure people was barbecuing, playing cards or whatnot, and playing the game in the basement. And I just remember that, hey, for some reason, it was weird. I was used to the amount of people being there for like the finals and playoff game, Super Bowl. I don't want to say it was all centered around Bron, because like I said, it was barbecue and people just be kicking it. But everything stopped when it was like 7 o'clock or whatever time it was when that it was time for that decision to be made. Because I think we all had the same feeling, like, dang, how long this little show gonna go on before you make this, you know, we thinking we gonna get on 5 minute thing. Oh, man, we have to sit it out. It was funny, but I do remember, too, right after he made the decision, I forgot which system it was. Well, I know we went to 2K immediately and went to go change them rosters up and go see what it looked like.
Yeah.
Hey, and you know what's crazy? The video game players of the world already knew, hey, we got to put Bosh at the 5, man. We got to run this small ball. And it's crazy. It took Eric Spoelstra 2 seasons to figure that out.
That was the first thing I did several hours after looking at all the media coverage of the decision. I was like, man, we got to see how this look on the video game, man. Because, like, we ain't never seen a pairing like this in our lifetimes. At least that was my thoughts. Where I was that day, I remember that day like it was yesterday because it was actually the day before my 17th birthday. I was working out. I'm in the south suburbs of Richland Park, Illinois, in my father's crib. And I had the television on all damn day. from the morning to the night on ESPN just trying to see what any rumblings were. I heard that Miami was the favorite that morning, and it felt like it was Miami at the time, but after I got done working out, I just sat around the crib, chilled, and when 7 o'clock came, I was like, yeah, I know what I'm watching. And yeah, like Torin said, it was a slugfest to get through. You heard Chris Broussard up there, Mike Wilbon, talking about his career and stuff. I had never seen an event like that, centered around just one guy in the middle of the summer having us at a standstill. Like, to me, the free agency saga of 2010 was like 10 times better than the season, even though we was just coming off of a 7-game series between the Lakers and the Celtics. Every day you heard various news and reports and so forth, and it forced me to at least stay engaged and locked in with the product after the season, weeks after the finals, in ways that I hadn't. But I was just sitting in my father's house, man, in the South Suburbs, just watching it all unfold. And I remember when he made the announcement, I was like, damn, I know he winning at least one championship with this group, if nothing else. Like, I just know he's winning one. And to see the reaction from people in Cleveland, like my stepmom, she was looking at it. She was like, man, they doing all this for that? And I was like, yeah. I said, it's crazy, ain't it? It was just something, you know, to watch unfold in live time. You definitely won't forget where you were.
Well, I wasn't in Cleveland. That's Northeast Ohio. But I did my last 3 years of high school in Northwest Ohio. And I always tell people, Ohio, no disrespect to the people, cool people out there. Hey, at some point, might even still have some property out in Ohio. But that state, at one point, all it had to offer was Cedar Point, the Ohio State Buckeyes, and LeBron James. Now, he meant a whole lot to that state, and I know he meant a lot to that city, just from an economic standpoint that's always brought up. Just from a national respect, because we know the Browns aren't anything. The Indians had so many heartbreaks, even though they had a lot of talent in the 90s and early 2000s. But Bron, he made it an event, and man. Every night at that queue, you see the game and they showing the camera from up top and you see the We Are All Witnesses signs with his arm stretched. It was almost
Welcome to Loudville.
It was almost bigger than having a statue at that time.
That's true.
And you was getting ran too when you came to the queue. I mean, they had got seasons where they was like 39-2 in that building. Like, it was electric. And being able to live in that state, that was probably one of the great benefits of it, honestly, just had LeBron on local TV every night. So it's highlights that I've seen that I can't quite all the way remember, but just know that night to night, it was always a crazy athletic feat he was doing.
I can only imagine what it was like watching it in that region at that time period. Because I think back to the time in which I witnessed LeBron notch his first ever 50-point game. And I believe it was his second year in the league. Like, it was such a major event to the standpoint where you had to watch it. But the thing that's wild about it in hindsight is when I caught it live, I was watching it off of Telemundo. It was always fun and cool to see that as a fan. So I can only imagine what it was like seeing it from somebody in that region in the heart of the state of Ohio. But you know, for some of us basketball fans and avid followers of the game, the decision truly changed the way we view not only free agency, but the way rosters are built by executives, in addition to the way we would go on to assess and evaluate teams. Some watch the respective salary caps of respective franchises even more in the quest to gauge the time the team they follow would be in peak position to acquire the star of their dreams when the day their given contracts came to a close, while others sought to pay way more attention to the NBA on a daily basis in ways they never did before. The game was never the same. Did the decision impact the way that you either evaluated team, watched, or saw the game itself?
The decision changed, I feel like, everything about how I watched the NBA. At that point, I've always been somebody interested in numbers. But at that point, I wanted to know about every level of the game. The executive side, the ownership side, the player side, the coaching side. No, I just wanted to know what made this one guy make such a big decision that clearly just seemed to affect the world. At the beginning of the decision episode, I was just, you know, watching it as a diehard NBA fan. By the end of that night, we learned that it was world news. And I don't care how big
guys see him in the NBA, it's still another level of fame that exists outside of sport. And that definitely came to be true after that. Miami Heat turned the NBA into a must-watch television night to night. Night to night. It's no doubt on, like, just the impact. NBA Twitter was, I'm sure it already existed, but the whole purpose of it, it got served the night of the decision. And going forward, and you see what that's become. Even just though listening to guys report and break news, Stephen A. coming back, being the guy to break the news about LeBron joining the Heat, and that revitalized his career. And you fast forward 15 years to the event with LeBron and Stephen A. this year on the sidelines in L.A., you almost forget about that one element of that argument. You talking about my son, and I play a pivotal role in revitalizing your career. Would Kobe moving to another team cause that much of a ripple effect? Because he's teased it so many times up to that point in his career. The Clippers, the Bulls, the Kobe Shaq breakup. Not only did it change stuff for me, it just changed everything. It changed the game.
You know, it's funny you bring up the NBA Twitter dynamic. LeBron joined Twitter 2 days prior to making the decision. And I remember it well because I started my account that same day. And the reason why I got a Twitter account is because I wanted to follow LeBron along through it. I would have never joined Twitter if it wasn't for the decision. There would be no new 24 if it wasn't for the decision. The decision made me watch the game on a deeper level. I thought I was a person that really watched NBA basketball, but when LeBron made the decision, I had opening night circled on my calendar. I knew what game I wanted to see, and I knew it was going to be the Heat versus the Celtics. I didn't care if it was in Miami or Boston. That was the game that I needed to see. I needed to see him on the floor against Paul Pierce. I wanted to get every single story that I could from the top beat writers at that time. Not only just the top beat writers, but the top reporters. You talk about Stephen A. Smith. My television was on SportsCenter every damn day throughout that summer. And it never changed after that. It made me look at the way in which athletes were covered on a deeper level. It made me look at the way in which reporters go about doing their job. And it made me excited about the game in a way that I never was, because I was like, I don't know how long he's going to stay in Miami, but I want to see this all the way through. And I had never felt like that at any given point in my life, no matter what player I followed over the course of my 17 years of life at that time. I was a big Shaquille O'Neal fan after Michael Jordan retired, but I can honestly say I didn't follow every single game Shaquille O'Neal played the way I did LeBron James from 2010 onward. But LeBron James was such a vital figure in our generation that I remember before he even made his NBA debut, I was telling my mom I was excited just at the thought that the best player in the nation was going to turn pro and join the Cleveland Cavaliers. When I heard that he was going to go to the Miami Heat, it just shaped a lot of things for me. Like, the conversations that I had with people were different, as opposed to who's better, Michael, Kobe, you know, Kobe or LeBron. It was, well, which team is better? Which team is coming up in the future? Who's going to be the biggest threat to this team as they get to the point where they're a finals contender? It changed everything for me. It didn't just impact the way that I evaluate teams. Like, I don't think I ever have an interest in the sports media landscape if it's not for this shit.
Well, yeah, it changed stuff for a lot of people, as I'll reiterate. You spoke about conversations you had with people. Sports has always been a part of daily conversation, but the decision kind of, it put everybody in a corner. One moment put everybody in a corner. Oh, you know, when we say we done with the 90. Well, that type of guy got created from the decision, because guys from their era would never do something like that. So you got those fans were created. You got the bandwagon fans. You know, people were all of a sudden decked out in Miami Heat gear. People were anti-Miami Heat all of a sudden. The Miami Heat arena used to never be full, but now they the number one team in the world now. It put everybody just into the NBA arena. Kobe fans became even and more entrenched into they love for Kobe. The Boston fans talking big, big stuff.
They were.
The Bulls fans, they like that underdog role. You know what I'm saying? We going to put up a good fight against all of these motherfuckers. You spoke about it wouldn't be a new 24. I mean, we got to give Stephen A. and Skip Bayless and Bill Simmons a lot of credit for that. But them guys made millions of dollars being able to have such a fascinating character to create content on for years after year, day after day. It's just crazy, like, when you really just think about the ripple effect of just this one day and how many, like, stars got created from it. Not even just the money and just the careers, but, like, real legitimate stars. It's just interesting because now you see the league and they're doing everything that's possible to keep it from happening again. The biggest moment maybe in league history that wasn't on court, and they've spent the last 15 years closing every loophole to keep it from happening. And the crazy part is they doing all of that work and it'll never be another LeBron James.
It won't.
Even the Kevin Durant move, like, love KD, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, took care of business against Bron 2-1 in the finals. He probably won't say it because it might not be true, but hey, even a part of the reason he left Golden State was because of the fact that he found out, even after beating Bron, that it don't matter. That's LeBron James. He's the center of the NBA universe. That's a part of why people are upset, you know, that he's still around. But it's just the truth of the matter. And it all sparked from this day.
And you know, the thing that's crazy is he became embedded in our consciousness even more because the 2010-11 season marks the first of 8 consecutive seasons in which he happens to play every June in the NBA final, you know? And like I said, it definitely had a trickle-down effect on a lot of levels for a lot of people and fans included that were, you know, watching every single minute and moment of this journey.
Yeah, that even the 8 straight finals, you know, we all know the infamous clip from the welcome party. You know, not one, not two, not three, not four. He put himself in position for that opportunity to happen. And that's just really the story of this whole thing. Just being able to put yourself in the position for the magic to happen. You got to at least show up. You got to show up for the trick to happen. So whether good or bad, whether people agree with it or not, it was the best thing for all parties involved, fans, league, and I might even say LeBron James, that he made the decision that he made.
So you do believe that he made the right decision in hosting the decision?
The TV show or just period?
You can answer it from a myriad of vantage points, whether it's the television special or deciding to team up with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh on the Miami Heat.
Yeah, LeBron going to the Miami Heat July 8th, 2010 was the best move. See, LeBron never spoke in the ways of a Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant said, you know, hey, he wanted to outdo Mike. Mike got 6 rings. He wanted to go get 7. Bron never spoke quite about just things in the way Magic Johnson did. When Magic Johnson was playing basketball, at least from my recollection, he was all business on the court and all smiles off the court. LeBron James, early in his career, stated that he wanted to be a global icon and a billionaire. Now, I don't think that happens without this. Weeks later, after the decision, LeBron debuted his new shoe, the LeBron 8, in a South Beach colorway. It immediately takes his shoe brand to a whole nother level. It went from an on-court shoe to a shoe that people was wearing off the court. It was one of their flexing fits. You know, if you was around in the early 2010s, it was a lot of basketball shoes that were being worn with regular outfits. You know, the whole snapbacks and tattoos era and shit.
Right.
Cargo shorts, camouflage.
Yep.
Hey, people always, you know, Bron will never be Michael Jordan in that regard. But that LeBron 8, it opened up a lot of doors in the shoe game. We started seeing a lot more colorways dropping month to month. You know, it was no longer just home, away, and all-star edition shoes. Like, Nike kept trying to strike the match again with that South Beach colorway. They didn't brought it back on shoes that weren't Bron. It's just the colorway you see now and you associate with. I would say that was probably the most successful generation of his shoe line was his time in Miami. The move made him a global icon as he set out. Once he started to win championships, you saw the endorsements transform into brand equity deals. He was in South Beach. He was in Florida. He making the most money he's ever made with no state income tax. Like, trust and believe, all of these things played a factor. Like you said, it was college. It was a 4-year sprint to gain as much experience as you can. And that's what he did. It was wins, it was losses. It was 2011 happened in the finals. That led him to become the guy he is today. You don't get that type of pressure if you just stay in Cleveland because you're doing the thing that everybody accepts as the right way. LeBron made himself an event. Floyd Mayweather, NBA Finals come. We know Bron there. Half of us want to see him make history and win. Half of us want to see him make history and lose. That first game in Cleveland, back, the Bulls, the debris being through.
I remember that shit.
We look at the NBA finals of this decade, you know, after the bubble, and they all haven't really felt like event. LeBron James was in the finals in the 2010s. Oh, it was an event, man. Summer ain't get started until them finals was over, especially the Miami Heat days. So, you know, when you do the comparison between him and Michael Jordan, you look at the 92 Olympics being an inflection point for Michael Jordan and his popularity and the popularity of the game itself. And you got to look at the summer of 2010 as being the same for LeBron James. We knew the game grew globally, and we knew the game just grew, like you said. Guys aspiring to become podcasters now. Guys aspiring to want to be an agent, be in TV production. Like, it just created so many dreams. You know what I'm saying? Hey, we might not get Watch the Throne, the album, without something like this happen. Ain't that like LeBron James? Ain't that just like D-Wade? It was a cultural thing, man. And like, this was truly LeBron's Beatles moment. This was the opening song to the show.
I think LeBron James, in the end, made the right decision in a myriad of ways. I think the event, as I said earlier, it benefited children. We saw a young Donovan Mitchell in the audience. We didn't even know what happened to, you know, become an all-star NBA player. Who's to say he doesn't even consider joining the Cavaliers if it's not for LeBron doing that? You saw the videos come out when he got traded to Cleveland of him in a Cavaliers jersey, a LeBron jersey. I think he made the right decision because it not only launched the sport in a different stratosphere, it helped ignite, like Torrance said, goals and aspirations of others. You heard me say earlier, it's no new 24 without the decision. I'm pretty sure I'm not the first or last person that may have that sentiment. It made people engage and talk about the games on platforms in ways that I didn't see in years prior. And yeah, you know, the stars of yesteryear, they definitely wouldn't have did nothing like this. And it's funny, even looking back at it, you wonder sometimes, could you even reduplicate it with another star? And the answer is no, you really can't. So all in all, I think he made the right decision from a basketball standpoint for certain. And as far as from a business standpoint, it benefited other people. And in a lot of ways, it put Randy, Rich, and Maverick in a different light for being able to pull off that event. And it helped them to separate themselves from the industry on some levels and create their own thing. And that was the dopest part about it. And I think that's the part that oftentimes gets overlooked. We tend to look at it strictly from a basketball standpoint, but LeBron pretty much did everything he set out to do from that day forward. And look at where those guys are at now, individually within their business acumen and career. We see Rich Paul is the agent to LeBron James. A guy that started out on a 100K salary, learning the game from his initial agents in the Goodwin brothers from Oakland, California. We see Maverick Carter making plays in the business space, creating TV shows and various, you know, other endeavors, partnering with brands and the like. We see Randy taking him around places and stuff like that, doing his own thing. Like, everybody knew how to play their role. And that's been a beautiful thing to see. The fact that they was able to pull all this off, man, on a network that didn't really have to get in the time, but did, I think it speaks a lot of volumes. And like Torrance said, it brought a lot of people back in the spotlight. Like, people forget Stephen A was let go from ESPN at one point. Look at where Stephen A. Smith is now. Bill Simmons was with ESPN, helped birth 30 for 30, left. Now you see him with his empire at the ring.
And I believe that he has a story about him pitching a free agent show to Mav Carter during the All-Star game 2010.
Right, which happened courtesy of a Pistons fan that wrote in his mailbag.
Yeah, and that, you know, led up to what you said about the guys like Jim Gray and others and John Skipper at ESPN, turn it into what it eventually became. Yeah, man, like I said, a lot of guys, Skip Bayless, Stephen A., the networks, the NBA franchises, everybody valuation went up. So if you ever see LeBron James become an owner of an NBA team, the big payback is from this day. This day, everybody got richer. And from this day, us as fans, we really created the NBA universe. It really spawned from this moment. It's a continuous universe now at this point. Whether you watching the game, listening to podcasts, YouTube, wanting to know about the off-season dirt, wanting to hear ex-players talk about, oh, man, I could have ended up on this team and played with this guy. Me and this guy talked about this where it started, at least for our generation. Now, y'all could say, oh, man, we had that in our day in the 90s. Nah, shut up. Y'all said that guys shouldn't team up and stuff like that. So you don't get to talk about it. We do.
And most guys from that era didn't always tell all the offseason business, whereas now that's in the forefront more than ever before, as you said. But that concludes this episode of The Decision 15 years later on Second Chance Points, an extension of the New 24 podcast. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard in this particular episode, as well as all the other episodes that you may have listened to throughout the course of the 24-25 season, then please feel free to give us a 5-star rating with additional comments across the podcast platforms you use to listen in to us each week, as we truly appreciate all of your support. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24, across Instagram and X at TNTF_, to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows or episodes, as we got plenty more to come for you guys over the course of the summer. So make sure to stay on the lookout for it by subscribing to our RSS feed directly at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, thanks for listening to yet another edition of Second Chance Points. So long, everybody.